This is the Faith Debate, a theological roundtable gab fest with the Mixmaster as the master of ceremonies and the notorious Triple B, the big bridge builder. Can we build it? Yes, we can. The Faith Debate is a free-for-all forum.
Hoo-ah!
Where faith community leaders wrestle over the truth.
Yabba-dabba-doo.
In less than 30 minutes, learn more about what really matters than others learn in a month.
Ooh, how convenient.
Are you ready for a clash of ideas? Are you ready for the sound of freedom?
Let's get it!
Let's get ready to rumble.
Ah, yeah.
In this corner, weighing in with a Master of Divinity from Reformed Theological Seminary, the Faith Debate Master of Ceremonies, Troy Skinner.
You got a moron here, is that it?
And in this corner, weighing in as a pastor, teacher, and founder of Bridges, connecting needs and resources in the local community.
Ooh, mama.
The notorious big bridge builder, John Switzer.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
The Middle East is on fire. At least it seems that way. It's always seemed that way, hasn't it? Why? What's at the root of the conflicts? What has been tried to bring peace? And what should be tried next? On the panel today, two men who will share their understanding of the history standing behind where we now stand. What has brought us here? On the show, of course, today, past president of Frederick's Evangelical Ministerial Fellowship, founder of Frederick 48, founder of Crossroads Valley Church, co-founder of the Faith Debate, in fact, and most recently founder of Bridges, connecting needs and resources in Frederick County, Jonathan Switzer. And also on the panel this week, candidate for United States Senate. That's right, we're moving on up in the world.
Woo!
Author of Joseph's Bones, Understanding the Struggle Between God and Mankind in the Bible. He's a leader of a Sunday school Bible class as part of a Jewish Reconstructionist Shavara for 10 years. He is Dr. Jerome Jerry Siegel. So I really appreciate you taking the time, Dr. Siegel. We were further away than he thought. He followed the breadcrumbs, and 7 hours later, here he is.
Jesus.
So thank you for making the trip.
Yeah, that's a long trip.
Yeah. So we got a lot of ground to cover. We're going to try to do an arc of shows. Our goal here is to try to get 4 shows done, so we don't have to get everything said today, but okay. You know, let's try to stay focused. I want to start broad and narrow ourselves down. So starting broadly, looking at the Middle East region more generally and talking about some of the big picture issues like the Arab Spring and how Iran influences what's going on in that region, things like that. So with that in mind, this is for the listener to know what's going on as well as us on the panel. Dr. Siegel, what's been your role? You have a pretty impressive resume. If you go on your website and look at all the things, or you do just a Google search, it's rather impressive. So, you know, in a relatively short amount of time, how would you describe what your role has been in the Middle East peace process over the years?
Well, I started out, it's funny, I actually professionally was working in USAID as the coordinator for the Near East, which meant that I had a professional responsibility for bringing U.S. policy to bear on the Near East Bureau, that is implementing it. I discovered that just making a law doesn't necessarily mean that you've changed government.
Right.
But interestingly, that actually really had very little to do with what emerged. What emerged really was in 1982, Israel invaded Lebanon, and it invaded Lebanon under a pretext. An attempt had been made on the life of the Israeli ambassador to Great Britain by a Palestinian. And the group that actually did it was a group called the Abu Nidal group. He was a breakaway from Fatah, from Arafat's group, and actually tried to kill Arafat. But
he's Begin, trying to kill everybody.
The Begin Ariel Sharon government, Sharon was defense minister, used that as a pretext for invading Lebanon. And the idea was actually that they didn't explain this to their colleagues in the Knesset, but the idea actually was to catch the whole PLO leadership in Beirut and just kill them. They really wanted to kill them. And the idea was that you could eliminate Palestinian nationalism.
Cut off the head.
If you cut off the head, right, exactly. And what their goal was really was permanent Israeli control over the West Bank and all of Jerusalem. And they believed that the PLO really was the source of this nationalist impulse. And they went after them. And
so this has come out pretty clear since then that that was the case with the Begin-Sharon government at the time?
Yes, it is.
It's not disputed facts or anything like that?
I don't think so, no. In fact, it turned into a horror story and a disgrace. And it was the Reagan administration, by the way, that transported the PLO leadership out of Lebanon on U.S. Navy vessels.
Wow.
We took them out.
Interesting.
And we brought them to Tunisia, where they had refuge.
Huh.
And one of the things that happened, actually, after they were taken out.
Wow, that's such a dramatic story, isn't it?
Following all the pieces here. The question was, would they be able to leave with their guns, with their arms, right? Mm. The Israelis said no. The Palestinians said, we insist. The Americans said, okay. Then the American captain, right, radioed the Pentagon and about the Israelis, say, what do we do if they shoot at our boat?
Yeah.
And the order came back, shoot right back.
Yeah,
Israelis.
Wow. Yeah.
So, of course, it never happened.
Sure, yeah.
But what did happen was a complete horror story, which is that there was a right-wing militia, Christian militia, called the Falange, that—
In Tunisia?
No, in Lebanon.
Oh.
In Lebanon.
Yeah.
And they had, suffered some kind of blow. I forgot exactly what, but one of their top leaders was assassinated, and they blamed the Palestinians and so on. And they, after the PLO fighters had left, they went into two Palestinian refugee camps.
Sabra this is the Shatila. Christian group, the Christian yeah. militia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they went in, and they massacred anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000, depending on who's counting, women and children, just essentially cut their throats.
Mm.
And the thing was, not only was this like this horrible story, but the Israeli soldiers facilitated this by firing flares into the sky that made possible this nighttime operation. And the Israelis were really in control, and they could have stopped this if they wanted to. And they basically abetted it. Well, this resulted in incredible protests, and a commission was formed inside of Israel that forced actually Sharon's resignation as defense minister and said he should never be allowed to become defense minister again. Then no one anticipated that he would become prime minister.
Yeah, yeah.
And Begin, I don't know if this
is a whole story in and of itself.
But Begin died not too long afterwards. And I felt that he was, he died in disgrace, kind of a broken man, because he had a certain kind of decency to him. He was an old school, liberal parliamentarian, really, with certain kinds of views on the conflict.
Mm.
So, but it went down. It was really, really just, so horrible. What a horrible incident in the history of the Jewish people
right.
for this to occur.
Hmm.
At any rate, 5 years later, well, here's what happened to me. Right?
Yeah, you have like so much information that you could like go,
even 2 hours,
the next four shows just kind of walking us through this history. So keep us focused as we're going along here, Troy.
Yeah, so in maybe like 60 to 90 seconds, from that point to here, your involvement has been what? You established the Jewish peace
When this happened, group. I said to a friend of mine, we got to do something. This is at the beginning when they invaded Lebanon. We saw that it was crazy.
So this is how you got into it.
Yeah,
this is the moment.
And we went, actually, my friend said, let's talk to Mark, meaning Mark Raskin, who's the father of Congressman Jamie Raskin.
Okay.
Right, who we knew. Knew Mark, and Jamie was like 20 or something, or younger. Right, we went to Mark, and the three of us sat down, and it was Mark's idea. He said, why don't we have a Jewish demonstration in front of the Israeli embassy?
Yeah.
And it seemed like a great idea. We created something called...
And that's like the first time that Jewish people were... demonstrating for the Palestinians
we called it Washington Area Jews opposed to the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. And the sense was that this was
a prophetic voice.
A senseless war that had no justification and could not contribute to resolving the conflict.
Sure.
We were never a pro-Palestinian group.
Yeah.
And I've never viewed myself as pro-Palestinian, except in the abstract sense of I'm pro-Israel, I'm pro-Palestinian, in that sense. But,
yeah.
but not Palestinian solidarity, person or organization. Anyway,
you can almost see the prophet saying, in the Valley of Jezreel, that the Lord is coming with justice. You hear the prophetic voice saying that, hey, there's a problem here that needs to be dealt
with. That's exactly,
the house of Jehu has gone too far.
You put your finger exactly on it. On my perspective in all this is actually... that the issues of justice are at the heart of this conflict, and we can talk about what they are.
Sure.
But that you will never have a stable peace unless they're addressed.
Yeah.
And they are not addressed. They're not addressed. And there's a sort of a bias in the so-called, the conventional wisdom of the peace processors that say things like, well, it's sort of pointless to talk about narrative. You've got your narrative. Well, narrative really is another word for moral story. That's what narrative really is.
Certainly, yeah.
And if you don't engage, you know, the questions of morality on this, and you don't have policy that at least addresses the way it's seen by the other side, you'll never have a stable peace.
All right, so this guy's a storyteller, but basically what you've done then for the last 25, 30 years is
well,
that you've played a role
30, 36,
of promoting justice in the Israeli interactions with the Palestinians in a way that is trying to recognize that it's not an either or, that there's some kind of a path in the middle that the Israelis can do justice,
yeah, well,
and at the same time find a way to let the Palestinians, you know, not be treated unjustly, you know, to somehow walk that
broadly speaking
prophetic
line. I would put it this way. I've actually become, in the 36 years, I've gone from a protester to actually, I mean, it's embarrassing to claim it myself, but I'd say I'm actually on the cutting edge of conflict resolution with respect to this conflict.
Yeah.
So, like, I ran a Track 2 group a couple of years ago in which the members of the group on the Israeli side were two people, former deputy prime minister of Israel under Sharon and Netanyahu's former national security advisor.
Yeah.
So I've gone from being, you know, 36 years ago, a guy with a sign in front of the Israeli embassy to someone who made conflict resolution his life work and has sort of achieved a certain kind of stature.
So as Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers, they shall be called the sons of God. Basically, you stepped in the role of peacemaker as a prophetic voice calling for there to be discussion instead of just violence and polarization.
Yeah, and a lot more sophisticated than just discussion, but real I have alternative processes.
Yeah, no, I get it.
And so on, but yes,
yeah, it's an intensive process.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So,
Let me jump in here. I'm Troy Skinner. This is the Faith Debate on 930 WFMD. Yeah. You can find us online at WFMD.com, keyword faith. Yeah. Jonathan Schweitzer, co-founder of the show. On
good
again this week, and Middle East expert and Maryland senatorial candidate for U.S. Senate, Dr. Jerry Siegel. John, I'll start with you, and you can chime in as well,
sure.
Dr. Siegel. We've got a good feel, a flavor of what the conflict has felt like and looked like over the last handful of decades.
Okay.
Give me an even bigger picture. Go back in the Wayback Machine and you know, from way, way back, as you understand it, how have we gotten to where we are now?
You're talking about the end of the 1800s, early 1900s?
As far back as you feel comfortable going.
The problem at that time, and you probably know this a lot better than I do, is that that Great Britain had responsibility for the mandate there in Israel, and they were promising in the early 1900s to the Palestinians certain things about statehood, and they were promising things to the Jewish, the new settlers, Zionists, that were coming in at the time out of, you know, two sides of their mouth, and coming out of World War, you know, in the midst of World War II, it looked to me like the Jewish people said, you know, we just need to go for it. The Israelis gave them the mandate, the land, and the Palestinians. Like, I have friends who, one of whom is the president of the Bethlehem Bible College, and other guys in the Nazareth region, Andrew Abu Ghazali and a couple other guys, who were driven off their land in 1948 at the point of a gun, and they trace their lineage as Palestinian Christians all the way back to AD 70 when the Jews were driven out by the Romans, right? And so, you know, do they have a right to the land? You know, if anybody does, they should have some. But they all grew up in refugee camps, you know, and kind of coming back into Israel. And they've got rights. They appreciate what Israel represents in the land in terms of religious freedom. But they grew up, and their parents grew up side by side with Muslim populations. And so, you know, they've got generations of living in what they would say is significant measures of peace together. But then, of course, the Israelis came in, and from their perspective, of course, it feels like the Jewish, I think they would describe it as, you know, that they are, they're controlling the land, that they're occupying the land, that it's an occupation, and that there's no freedom for those that are in the West Bank to do any kind of business, you know, to do anything. There's actually one guy that we knew that was in the Gaza Strip, and he was a evangelical Christian, but his friend was captured by Muslims, tortured all night long, and then killed the next morning, right? And so, like they get it that there, nobody in this situation is without sin, without fault, mm-hmm. but it's a tangle, it's a difficult situation. Am I describing it accurately?
Yeah, I don't want to quibble about this.
It's oversimplified,
I'm sure.
I would just simply
say that when I think about it, and I think that in terms of the Jewish story, which I think is sort of, in many ways, one of the most revealing stories about who is mankind, I started in a very different place.
Yeah.
And it's not so much that I believe in the literal truth of biblical history, but what we do know is that there was a Jewish polity that existed with different degrees of control over themselves or not control over themselves and so on.
Yeah, through many
years.
And they
fell under, like most of the Middle East, like most of the world actually, they fell under the control of a giant imperial power called Rome, which was one of the biggest.
And previous to that, Persia, and then Greece, and then Rome. I mean, although it's quite a bit of
yes, but the Roman thing, is decisive. Okay, the Roman thing is decisive. And yes, and by the way, what you just said about Persia and Babylon is very, very relevant. In fact, if you know, it's great to be on this show because I can talk about things that nobody else is interested in that I think are really important.
Yeah, I mean, so, hopefully we can help you with your run for the Senate somehow. But yeah, I love this. Right,
hopefully the one person listening is interested too.
Which you guys probably know, which is that one of the differences between the Hebrew Bible and what Christians call the Old Testament.
Right.
One of the important differences, I think, is that the books are ordered differently.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, if you take the Hebrew Bible, and it's not true with respect to the Old Testament, but you take the Hebrew Bible and you open it up and you go to the last page of the Hebrew Bible and you look at the last paragraph in the Hebrew Bible, you know what it's about?
It's not Malachi. It's
No, it's Chronicles, and it's the end of Chronicles.
Wow.
And what it is—
It's a judgment of God.
Listen, I'll tell you.
Okay, tell me, please. Okay. Yeah, this is good.
It's about King Cyrus. It's about the what happens after the Persians defeat the Babylonians.
Cyrus.
The context is the Israelites, or Judeans and so on, are in the Babylonian captivity.
Right.
Right? They're in the captivity, and the Babylonians are defeated by the Persians under Cyrus. And in the last paragraph, it tells you basically that Yahweh appears to Cyrus, and Cyrus, in response to this, says to the Jews,
go back,
you are free, and you're able to go back to where you came from, to Jerusalem.
Ezra, exact Nehemiah. Wording.
And he actually uses the word Aliyah, which we now talk about, of Jews going back to Israel.
Yeah.
We talk about, and in that passage, that word is there. But that's very important.
So you might not know this, but I have I grew up in a high school here in Montgomery Village that had a significant population of Messianic Jewish guys. Oh. And I went to seminary at a small seminary led by those guys. And they all have made Aliyah and live in Haifa and Nazareth and Jerusalem, you know, and are active at various levels, you know, there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, the relevance of this is that Persia is Iran.
Yep.
And Babylon is Iraq.
Yeah. Okay? Iran, Iraq.
And what you have in Jewish consciousness in the last part of the Bible and basically throughout most of the history, right, is this tension between Iraq and Iran, Persia and Babylon.
Yeah.
And what we've got today going on right now is actually the result of That's the Americans taking out Babylon. That is, we took out Saddam Hussein's regime.
Yeah.
And in doing that, we undid a balance of power relationship that goes back to biblical times that basically worked on the principle of...
Totally, the force is out of balance, man. Where's Buddha when you need him?
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
And so basically, you have that pattern in the Middle East a lot, but basically there was a natural alliance between Israel and Iran because you had Babylon in between them. Mm-hmm. And you had for instance...
And we took it out of the way.
When Iran was in this horrible, horrible war that we don't pay any attention to,
yeah.
I think, a million Iranians died against Saddam Hussein's regime.
Yeah.
Right? The Israelis, during that war, bombed the Osirik reactor, the nuclear reactor in Iraq. Right, and they did it with cooperation from the Iranians, and the Iranians had tried to knock out that reactor unsuccessfully themselves. And and this is the Ayatollah's regime, who actually are much more pragmatic because basically they and Israel had this thing in common.
Once again, there's the prophet saying, because you went down and joined with Egypt, the Lord is against you. You know, this making alliances with the nations in ways that are unethical, I think, is the way that you would say it, and ultimately end up backfiring in ways that create more injustice.
We're talking about the Bush administration policy. My God, the craziest damn thing. But the point that I want to make, going back to the Romans.
Can you make a mental note, because I don't want you to lose it. File away what your point is, because we're out of time in this segment.
Yeah, it goes quick, doesn't it?
So we'll jump into it in the next one. So make sure you hang on to it, because I'm going to come to you so you can do that.
Okay.
That's Dr. Jerry Siegel. He's running for United States Senate against Ben Cardin in the Democratic primary in just a few weeks. Jonathan Schweitzer, he's just started a new venture himself called Bridges. We'll learn more about that as the shows unfold over time. I'm Troy Skinner. You've been listening to The Faith Debate on 930 WFMD. We're online at WFMD.com, keyword faith. And one of the things that's striking, all these years you've heard about, the Jews and the Muslims and the Christians, and you think it's a, is it a religious conflict?
Yeah.
Sort of, but it's also a political power conflict, it's a military conflict, it's an economic conflict, and we're talking about the balance of power in the region.
Yeah.
It's a human interest conflict, it's all of these things. That's why it's so darn complicated to figure out, but we'll solve it next week, 167 and a half hours from now. Till then, God bless.